I have a question for you. Is your e-commerce website heart-stoppingly beautiful or just merely functional? Sometimes it's hard to be honest with ourselves, but you probably know the answer. If your site features gorgeous photos, is easy to navigate, and converts your buyers at a really high rate, you're probably smiling to yourself right now. Maybe a little smugly. But more likely, you're cringing a little bit because you have this long mental list of all the things you know you could improve. But that's really what marketing's all about, making incremental improvements. Each day, you should strive to get a little bit better, a little bit faster, and a little more targeted. And those small improvements are exactly what we're talking about today. I'm Kara Hogan, and this is The Empowered Marketer. Today, we're talking with Ross Beiler, a marketer who aims to help e-commerce companies create more beautiful and functional websites that convert buyers. Ross is the founder of Growth Spark, a Shopify Plus agency that helps e-commerce businesses make more money, which is what we all want to do, right? He's worked with startups, retailers, and global companies, including Bose, Johnny Cupcakes, and Newbury Comics. But long before Growth Spark focused on e-commerce, Ross actually started the agency when he was still in college.
So I was, you know, like a lot of college students, just looking for a way to earn a little extra cash, get ahead on my student loans and all that kind of stuff. And I had dabbled a little bit here in design and technology through a few kind of previous projects and sort of gave it a go and started just doing freelance work. Honestly, anything that someone was going to pay me for. So setting up email, setting up domains, setting up blogs, installing WordPress, you know, doing anything that they needed. And very quickly, actually, really turned into kind of a very WordPress focused service offering. So found a little niche there and graduated the end of 2009. So 2010 went full time with it, had kind of enough clientele at the time to kind of just jump in.
What kind of e-commerce companies do you usually work with? And what are some of the common challenges facing a lot of your clients?
For us, it's not as industry focused. I mean, we have a lot more experience probably in apparel, you know, fruit and beverage, home goods, consumer product tech, that kind of stuff. But we actually find that clients fall into one of two buckets, more along their product catalog. So we've got a lot of clients that are kind of these single product or very, very low SKU count companies. And then those that are the exact opposite, you know, they have thousands and thousands of products. And the strategy that we take with each of those is actually quite different. So for a single product company, we have kind of an approach we call narrative driven design, where the work we do is very, very focused on the storytelling aspect of their site, their brand, you know, a lot of interactivity, you know, really custom homepages, product pages. You know, much more focused on, as you know, as a single product company, how do you get someone excited about that one product? On the flip side, when someone has thousands and thousands of products, you know, we're very focused on navigability, you know, filtering, search, merchandising, categorization, cross-selling, upselling, anything that gets people kind of deeper into that catalog and making, you know, multiple purchases or increasing the average order size. So obviously the end goal is still the same. We're still trying to get them to get customers to buy more, but it's a little different approach, you know, with each one of those two types of companies.
Why did you decide to specialize in Shopify rather than another platform? And, you know, what other technologies do you use for a lot of your clients?
So when we were thinking about making this switch in 2013, we had already had a couple experiences with Shopify that were really positive. We had actually tried a few of WordPress's e-commerce, you know, platforms or kind of plugins, just given our experience with WordPress, and things really didn't go as well as we had hoped, you know, for a couple of reasons. I think when it comes to open source software on the e-commerce side, that can be real challenging. I kind of call it the, you know, Friday at 2 a.m. challenge. If Friday at 2 a.m. something goes wrong with an open source software, who do you call? Maybe you can get a hold of your developer, most likely not. Maybe the hosting company can help, most likely not. So you're kind of stuck on an island. Whereas with Shopify, you could always, you know, technically call them. You could call, you know, any hosted e-commerce company. They usually have 24/7 support. So that was really appealing, you know, with hosted versus open source. So then it was sort of, okay, well, you know, there's BigCommerce, there's Volusion, there's, you know, all these other versions of hosted e-commerce platforms. Why Shopify? And for us, it was partly just we had experience in it. Part of it was what we were seeing them doing from a feature development perspective. They continued to be kind of at the forefront of evolving their platform. And the other thing is they just built such a good ecosystem. I mean, they were very, very supportive of the different, you know, theme designers, app developers, general implementation specialists like ourselves, who really worked with the platform. They did a very good job kind of cultivating that community, which was encouraging for us. As of kind of 2017, we've really been focusing now on sort of that post-purchase relationship and understanding customers. So for us, analytics has become a much bigger sort of area of focus. So whether it's, you know, obviously understanding Google Analytics and making the most of that platform, that's been critical. Also adding some more advanced kind of behavior tracking analysis tools, things like Hotjar, and now getting deeper into the sort of CRM and sort of customer segmentation realm with, you know, a platform like Zayus that can really help clients in not just understanding how someone's acting on the site, but how that then translates into the way that you approach them through the different marketing channels you have, be it, you know, paid ads or, you know, email marketing or what have you. So yeah, it's something we're ramping up quite a bit on this year, especially in the last couple months.
Another thing that I saw on your website, or actually I think I saw it on one of the LinkedIn posts that you wrote, talking about pricing strategies. So, you know, do you help a lot of your clients with pricing, and, you know, how tough is it to really figure out a pricing strategy for e-commerce products?
You know, it's one of those things where kind of pricing strategy is isolated a bit from kind of the promotion strategy, and they kind of go hand in hand, right? I mean, obviously, you know, your price is impacted by your promotions. You know, I think for us, we've really figured out a very solid tool set as to how to handle promotions through Shopify, be it, you know, discount codes, free shipping, BOGOs, product bundles, all those kind of things. When it comes to actual pricing strategy, that tends to come more from our merchants. You know, we're happy to chime in on recommendations around, you know, margin. I mean, generally, you need to think about just not just the cost of the product, but cost of acquisition. So for a lot of our clients, helping them kind of look at true profitability and trying to look beyond just, hey, we sold a t-shirt for $20, you know, it cost us $10 to make, we made $10. Well, no, it actually cost you $10 to acquire that customer. So unless you sell a second t-shirt, you're actually not making any money. You know, so having those conversations are absolutely critical. If you're a commodity product and you're already in a price competitive market, I think promotions are just part of the business. You know, that's especially true with furniture, with a lot of consumables, with some apparel, you know, depending on how it's positioned, more marketplaces, those kind of things. So I think inherently there, it's, you know, there is a baked in margin that's expected to be given away to a certain degree. I think with more premium brands, you know, especially those that are single product companies, I think it's extremely important to be sensitive to how much you're willing to discount. Oftentimes we'll encourage our clients to consider, you know, throwing in freebies. So, hey, buy our product and then get free stickers or get this free apparel, get this free other thing, or buy our product and get free shipping, or finding other ways to incentivize a sale or promote a sale rather than just lowering the value of the actual offering or product itself.
You know, you do a lot of site design and you focus a lot on e-commerce websites. What do you think is the most common mistake people make when it comes to their sites, and how important is design and photography for your clients?
Well, I would say, you know, photography is probably the number one mistake. People don't spend enough time thinking about the creative that they're adding to the site itself. So be it photography, videography, the written content, custom iconography, you know, banner design, all those elements. I mean, and this kind of shoots ourselves in the foot, but you put all those elements of a high degree of quality into a very basic minimal design, and you're going to have a professional looking site. It's going to look good, right? It's not going to be the most optimized. It's certainly not going to be specific to your brand as much as it could be. You know, there's obviously a lot of value in doing something that's entirely custom. But I think a lot of times merchants tend to focus too much on, you know, features and too much on customizations and not enough on the core content that they have. So our recommendation is always, hey, let's get that core content down first. Let's make sure that's of the highest quality can be. Let's make sure that messaging is consistent. And once that's in place, that's when you can really optimize all the other areas around that.
And so you talked a little bit about optimization. You know, how do you approach SEO for e-commerce, you know, for something like a clothing brand where there's so much competition? How do you try to actually win out on Google?
Yeah, I mean, our mindset with SEO, you know, is really kind of thinking of it in three buckets. There's sort of the on-site optimizations, there's the content optimization, and then we call PR optimization, right? So the on-site optimizations, luckily Shopify is quite good out of the box. You know, you're getting a lot of, you know, solid code base, things, themes tend to load fast. So I think there's a lot of inherent benefits with Shopify. That being said, there's always little improvements that you can make. There's an app called JSON LD that helps your structured data with proper configuration. automation. There's some apps out there that help with alt tags. There's apps that help optimize image sizes, which impact load speed, which is a huge factor in SEO. So there's always a number of very kind of low-hanging fruit items that you can do, you know, in addition to like optimizing meta information, things like that. Outside of the on-site optimizations, you know, content strategy, we're not, we tell our clients, you know, we're not content strategists per se. We're not, you know, SEO specialists and when it comes to content marketing. So we understand the best, you know, general best practices. We understand sort of the value of unique content, frequency of content, sort of the uniqueness and optimization of that content and everything like that. So it's one of those things where we really encourage our clients, if they don't have an in-house SEO specialist, to get one when it comes to optimizing their content. And then the last bit, you know, in terms of, you know, call it PR optimization, is you have to realize, although you can't, you know, hire someone to plant 10,000 links to back to your website and really see a positive impact on your site anymore, that did actually work 10 years ago. No one does.
I remember.
That was a huge business, link building businesses.
Yeah.
Although it doesn't work per se, you know, there is still obviously a tremendous amount of value in getting, you know, high quality publications covering you, social media influencers covering you. So I think there's still a lot of value in a link building strategy. I think it just has to be approached more from a PR perspective rather than from a bulk, you know, quantity perspective like it used to be.
Google definitely does not reward bulk over quality anymore.
Quantity is out.
Quantity is out, quality is in. How do you balance customer acquisition versus, you know, customer loyalty? And where do you focus a lot of marketing efforts?
With us, it really comes down to what the product is and who the company is. So if you have someone that is a single product company, and it's one of those things where it's like, okay, you know, I might buy a second one, or I might buy one for a friend, but chances are I'm only going to buy one instance of this particular product. It's a very different strategy than if it's, hey, you know, we're an apparel brand and we're constantly coming out with new collections and we're constantly, you know, diversifying our product catalog. And naturally people want, you know, new clothing. So I think for us, part of it is just understanding that. So if you're a single product company and it's really kind of a one and done sale, then obviously the acquisition focus is going to be a bit heavier. If it's a, you know, product with a deeper catalog and a lot of cross-sell, upsell opportunity, I think that's where, you know, customer loyalty, product bundling, upsells, all those kind of sort of strategies become more and more effective. One client that we've actually worked with for a while, and certainly one of our favorites, is a company called Bottle Keeper. It's a very interesting, very basic product to a certain degree. It's a device that allows you to store a beer bottle in a sort of a metal container, and will keep it cold, keep it safe from breaking, and then also seals at the top so it can kind of keep it fresh. So it's a very, very basic idea when you kind of tell it to someone. When they came to us originally, this is, you know, a few years ago now, but when they first came to us, they were using video as a means of telling this, which didn't work as well on mobile. There were some load speed issues. So what we did is actually rethought their entire web experience to be focused around physically demonstrating what the product looks like as you interact with the site. So if you go to it, you can see as you're scrolling down, you actually see the bottle keeper dismantle, and you can see how, you know, you add the bottle to it, how it seals and all that kind of stuff, kind of points out the features and benefits of it. So it was a really neat opportunity to apply some of these ideas of storytelling and narrative driven design to a single product company in a way that very clearly outlines the features and benefits of the product. And that's something that's worked really, really well for them, you know, since the launch.
Ooh, I just went to the site. It is really fun.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a lot of fun.
I like it. Yeah, it looks kind of like a water bottle. That's fun. What's a project that you worked on for one of your clients that you're really proud of? You know, what was so great and what did it achieve for them?
We had the pleasure of working with the guys over at Noble. It's a sort of an apparel and shoewear or footwear brand out of the Boston area where we're based. What we really liked about them is they had a very clear sense of their brand and a very clear sense of their product, and just have amazingly compelling product photography. A key thing is, you know, for us, when it comes to media, you need to balance sort of the photography and video of just the product itself versus sort of the product in action, what people often refer to as the lifestyle shot. They did a great job, you know, showing these, you know, incredibly fit people wearing their shoes, wearing their shirts, et cetera. It came across as quite compelling messaging. That was one of the things that we wanted to focus on. The other was really telling the story of the features of the product, you know, showing the construction of the shoe, showing the different angles, really explaining to the customer the materials that were involved and how that can actually have an impact on their performance. So really being able to get in there and highlight some of those key differentiators for their product was both fun for us, but also effective for them.
And so this is kind of my looking forward question. So how can e-commerce leaders, you know, prepare for the future?
I think what's really on our mind right now is the balance of personalization and automation, right? So as more and more platforms come out that allow you to use data to personalize the approach that you have to your marketing and personalize your approach to communication with clients, it's amazing the results that you can get. I mean, we're talking about very, very targeted messaging at the right time for the right medium. That's a very exciting proposition for merchants. You know, we're talking about sort of personalization at scale, driven through these automated tools. I think what's challenging is that, you know, a lot of merchants just aren't, one, aware of the tools that are available. There's just an awareness factor, and that's true for any industry, but I think especially where there's so many new technologies coming to market for e-commerce, I think that's one challenge. The second is understanding sort of the specific roles that each of these platforms play and how they kind of interrelate. So for us, you know, especially with Shopify, that's kind of built itself as this kind of hub and spoke model with Shopify the center and these different apps to kind of extend functionality and integrations. You know, it's important to consider, hey, I'm just not just adding these different apps, adding these different platforms, but there has to be some continuity in how they're communicating with Shopify and with each other. I think it's an important thing for folks to take a step back and just kind of map that out. You know, really think about, okay, if I'm going to add a tool that helps me, you know, automate the review collection process, you know, is that adding more email that's conflicting with my already, you know, set up marketing automation tool? You know, is my messaging inconsistent? Are my lists in sync? There's a lot of considerations like that that need to be made as you start to expand your war chest, you know, of tools. I think next year, you know, we're going to see more personalization, more automation. And I just hope folks can take the time to really understand all the options, you know, weigh the pros and cons of them all, and then just think through how to create a consistent, you know, cohesive message from one platform to the next. I think that's critical. You know, one thing I'm really excited about that I know Zayas is kind of, you know, pushing at the forefront is starting to think about sort of the relationship that you have with customers as a merchant. And for a long time, you know, it wasn't personalized. It wasn't, it was anonymized, if anything. You know, it was very hard to understand how individual customers were interacting with your brand. You know, although analytics tools in and of themselves don't immediately change your business, by getting that data and by having the time to then look at that data and start to just notice patterns, it's amazing the number of insights that you can get. When you look at a piece of data and sort of speculate on what might be causing that, okay, well, why is this particular segment of customers, you know, purchasing, but only when we're running a discount? Well, you know, maybe they're value-driven customers. You know, is that a bigger percentage of your customer base than you expected? If it is, maybe you need to, you know, appeal to them differently. Or why are we getting tons of repeat sales, but only when people are buying this one product? Well, maybe that's a product that's a consumable that does better than others. You know, is there a good margin in that? Is that something that you want to promote further? So I think it's a balance between, you know, getting the data that you need to understand customers at a personalized level and be able to create these segments, but then just spending the time to kind of hypothesize around why, you know, why these segments might be existing, why these patterns might be emerging. Experiment from there and see what changes have a positive impact on those different segments.
Yeah, I always think that's something that a lot of people miss when they're talking about analytics. I feel like a lot of people think analytics is cut and dry, like, if X, then Y. But really, it's if X, Y. Why is Y happening? We don't know. So yeah, that's definitely true. You have to use your brain in addition to the analytics.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a tool, you know. Unless you if you don't use it, you know, with your mind, like you said, if you don't think through things, then it's not going to add that much value.
Hopefully, you got a lot of value out of hearing from Ross as well. If you'd like to learn more about him and his company, GrowthSpark, you can visit their website, growthspark.com. And as you'd probably expect, it's a pretty cool site with a sci-fi theme that I personally love. Thanks for listening, marketers. And if you've made it this far, I'd love to hear from you. What did you think of the podcast? Did you love it? Did you hate it? Write us a review on iTunes. Or you can email me directly at empoweredmarketer@zaius.com. That's Z-A-I-U-S. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you again in 2 weeks.